Greetings, listeners. This is VK3OTN, the official station of the Radio Amateurs Old-Timers Club of Australia, with this month's news and information bulletin for members and friends of the club for December 2023. I am Andrew, a VK3 Charlie Alpha Hotel. Details on when to hear the news and information bulletins are available at the club's website, www.raotc.org.au. VK3OTN is available on a wide range of radio platforms, HF, VHF and UHF, along with 2-metre repeaters, amateur television, DMR, that is digital mobile radio, and D-Star. These news broadcasts are available for download for up to 6 months, just in case you missed the original news broadcast from the RAOTC website. Just put RAOTC into your favourite search engine. If you'd like to contact the club, then why not send us an email? Our address is raotc@raotc.org.au. I hope you enjoy this month's news broadcast. Welcome to the December 2023 edition of RAOTC Club News. There are a few items this month, and we start an update on OTN from Jim, VK3ZKK. The RAOTC has set up an editorial board consisting of 2 copy editors who edit the submitted articles, a desktop publisher who lays up the articles and inserts photos and diagrams, and 2 proofreaders. Hopefully members will submit enough articles for us to keep the editorial panel busy. The desktop publisher is using a program called Scribus, which is freeware. This saves paying an annual fee for commercial software. It also means that future desktop publishers will be able to download the publishing software for free. Templates for OTN have been produced, which will make future transitions of desktop publisher easier and quicker. Currently, the desktop publisher has 5 articles that have been submitted by members, and he has written 2 additional articles himself. One of his articles is over 15 pages long. So far, he has 42 pages for the March 2024 issue. A couple of reports are yet to be written. The size of OTN has to be increased by 4 pages at a time, so 2 or 3 new articles are required each time the number of pages is increased. Please write an article for OTN. We are always looking for articles and how our members got interested in wireless, their amateur radio and electronics activities, and how their amateur radio experiences helped them in their working careers. Talk to your radio friends and ask them to write an article or two. The articles do not have to be about radio or electronics. Some of the most popular articles that have been published in OTN have not been radio related. We are very keen to get articles to publish in OTN. The RAOTC webpage has a guide that provides good information about writing articles for OTN. We now have the team to process and publish articles. What we need is the articles. Melbourne Luncheon, held on September 28 at the Caulfield RSL. The most recent luncheon was attended by 42 members and guests who enjoyed an excellent 2-course luncheon. The guest speaker was Peter Wolfenden, a VK3RV, who presented a talk and PowerPoint presentation about the leading lights and bright sparks of the Melbourne City power supplies. This talk was recorded as a video by Mike Empt, a VK3 Charlie Hotel, and is available on YouTube for those members who were unable to attend or simply want to watch it again. A link to this video is available on the ROTC website on the page entitled Luncheon Speech Recordings. Not to be outdone this time around, everyone got 2 for the price of 1. That is, there were 2 presentations. Following on from Peter's excellent presentation, which lasted over an hour, was a presentation by 2 RAOTC members, WIA Secretary and Director Peter Klee of VK8ZZ and WIA Vice President and Director Lee Moyle, VK3GK. Many members will realise and appreciate the tireless work they put in as directors on the WA board. They gave us a short presentation of the progress of planning for the upcoming ITU conference, as well as an update on the transition to a class licence. This presentation was also recorded by Mike, VK3CH, and is also available as a YouTube video. Once again, a link to this video is also available on the ROTC website. I had seen Peter several times before via Zoom teleconference on and off over the last couple of years at ROTC committee meetings, but this was the first time in person. The weather in Melbourne that day was especially nice as opposed to Gateway to the South Pole type weather, and I explained to Peter that the weather here in Melbourne is like this all the time. Somehow, I don't think he quite believes me. ROTC at the Rosebud Radio Fest. The ROTC was represented at the most recent Hamfest held at Rosebud on the Mornington Peninsula, southeast of Melbourne, on November 12. Several hundred amateurs attended the annual Rosebud Radio Fest held each November, with attendance coming from all over Melbourne and also regional areas. Whilst many ham fests are often little more than a trash and treasure event, Rosebud sets itself apart from others by offering catering, outdoor displays and technical forums. This recipe allows many to get something out of the event, even if they have no intention to buy anything, and a great opportunity to catch up with others, similarly in line with the Melbourne and Perth luncheons. Our administrative officer, Jim, VK3ZKK, along with his wife Judy, VK3JAG, manned the table kindly donated by the hosting Southern Peninsula Amateur Radio Club, at no cost to us. This allowed Jim and Judy to showcase ROTC to the wider amateur community, with two more members joining. I was also due to attend Rosebud, however, a hospital procedure got in the way, an unexpected surprise, and prevented me from taking part of this event. These unexpected surprises in life lead me on to the next subject, which was covered some time back. Planning ahead. Disposal of deceased radio amateur's equipment. This is an item put together by Ian Godsell, a VK3JS, at the request of the ROTC committee, and is something all radio old-timers should think about. Till death do us part is usually associated with marriage amongst older people. A similar sentiment probably exists among amateur radio operators as regards our equipment. We all know operators who never get rid of anything, and those who upgrade regularly as well as adding to their shacks when a new interest comes along. All of this is fine and helps the sale of new equipment. However, time passes and we eventually get to a point where we think about retiring and possibly start to run into health difficulties, which for some may lead to a lessening of on-air activity and interest in the hobby of amateur radio. This is normal enough, but sadly, the next step is often overlooked, and that is making arrangements for our final illness and eventual death. For many of us, a family member has been asked to look after our affairs. But the question arises, have we fully briefed this loved one on all our wishes? Have we even thought of our amateur radio gear amongst who gets our possessions? If we have not, then we run the risk of a relation suddenly being confronted with a room full of that stuff and having no idea what to do with it. Particularly if we have a large tower and a beam antenna in the back garden. Are you in this category? Even if you are still in good health and quite active in the hobby, have you wondered what to do with your rigs if you get sick? Or what will happen to your beloved equipment in the event of your death? If this is you, then it is suggested that you stop for a moment and consider these questions. You can read the rest of this very interesting article on the ROTC website with a link on the main menu. New members. Today I am pleased to welcome the following new members to ROTC. Barry Kemp, a Victor Kilo 3, Alpha X-ray Kilo. Wal Wallace, Victor Kilo 4, Charlie, Bravo, Whiskey. Trevor Armstrong, Victor Kilo 3, Echo Hotel. Chris Long, Victor Kilo 3, Alpha Mike Lima. Rob Meaden, Victor Kilo 4, Alpha Delta Uniform. And finally, Lionel Bird, Victor Kilo 7, Zulu Lima Bravo. Silent Keys. For the first time since I commenced compiling these news and information bulletins, I haven't received any reports of Silent Keys in the last 2 months. Members are reminded that the very latest news is available via the ROTC website. Put ROTC into your favourite search engine to find it. www.rotc.org.au. The ROTC committee would like to wish everyone of you all the best for the upcoming holiday season and Christmas break, with the next broadcast due to take place on Monday, the 5th of February 2024. And that's all the club news we have for you this month.
You are listening to VK3OTN and associated relay stations. VK3OTN is the official station of the Radio Amateurs Old Timers Club Australia Incorporated, with the monthly news and information bulletin for members and friends of the club.
This month we have several interesting technical articles for you. First up is Clive, VK6CSW, who relates to a story originally heard on the ABC regarding hiring a new Tesla electric car and some of the pitfalls to look out for. This will be followed by an article I put together for the most recent September 2023 OTN, and it's presented by one of my guest speakers. I've split the article into two parts, with the remaining second part on the next broadcast. This is in order to keep the broadcast to around 30 minutes in length. Now, it's over to you, Clive.
Norman Hermant is the ABC's social affairs correspondent. On the 16th of September 2023, he published the following article in the ABC News. It's entitled, "I Rented a Tesla for a Month. It Was a Steep Learning Curve." Norman writes, "My wife and I decided to rent a Tesla on a visit to Canada last month. A major car rental company was renting them out for about one-third the cost of a petrol car. We figured, how different could it be? Turns out, a lot different. It's not a car, it's an operating system with wheels. The anxiety over our car choice started to build 6 weeks before our trip. An email from the rental company popped into my inbox. Introducing your Tesla Model Y. 2 weeks later, another message arrived. Are you ready to experience the rental revolution? This was followed by another email. It's time to explore the world of EV. We read the emails, looked at EV electric vehicle charging options, and when we picked up the Tesla in downtown Toronto, we thought we were ready. First of all, everything about the Tesla Model Y is different from a regular car. Door handles? Yep. These are a two-step process. Push the back part in, the front part pops out, and pull to open. Cool? Yes. Needlessly complicated? Also, yes. Virtually all of the controls for the car are on a big iPad-like screen, and I mean nearly everything. Before driving it for the first time, I wanted to adjust the mirrors. Now, in just about every car I've ever driven, there are switches to adjust the mirrors on the door by the driver's side mirror. Not the Tesla. You have to go through the screen, find mirrors, choose left and right, and use this ball toggle thingy on the steering wheel to make adjustments. Pretty much everything defaults to the screen. For example, in the default setting for when you reverse, the mirrors tilt to the ground so you can't use them to back up. That's to force you to use the image from the rear camera on the screen. We also use the screen to change our acceleration setting after our first floor it test on the road. After being thrown back into our seats, we figured out how to select the chill setting. That's really what it's called, chill. Even then, it was by far the fastest car I've ever driven. When you're driving, there's nothing directly in front of you to show how fast you're going or if your turn indicators are on. Instead, that's displayed on the top corner of the control screen, just to your right in North America or your left in Australia. In fact, aside from the big screen, the dash has nothing on it at all. I can only surmise this is some sort of tech bro design aesthetic. So clean, it reveals nothing about operating the car. Teslas don't have combustion engines, so there's nothing under the bonnet. Instead, there's a storage space called the frunk, or front trunk. We couldn't get it open for 2 days. On the third day, after consulting a YouTube video, we figured out we were pushing the wrong part of the control screen to open it. And we never did get the glove box open. It needed a pin. To remove the code in the settings, you needed another pin, which we didn't have. YouTube also provided the location of the hazard lights button. Not on the dash like a regular car, on the roof, of course. The thing is, driving and charging this car was not a problem. Tesla has a series of superchargers along the big highways in the province of Ontario. On average, it took about 45 minutes to charge up the battery to about 450 kilometers range. Tesla billed this automatically to the rental car company, so that part was brilliant. But for the driver of a low-tech, 9-year-old manual hatchback in Australia, the things this Tesla decided to do on its own were maddening. It has an automatic emergency braking as a default setting. If it determines a car turning across traffic in front of you is too close, it brakes on its own. The car just takes over. You can disable this, but again, you have to go into the settings. A few days in, the screen started bugging me to schedule a software update. I kept putting it off, but the car wore me down. A message came up and said once the update starts, we couldn't use the car for 25 minutes. Hardly the end of the world, but is this thing a car or a laptop? Every time we got in, the screen asked us to authorize data sharing. Every time we killed that box. We figured Elon Musk and Tesla can get along fine without our data. And how do the many people that own Teslas feel about all of this? Well, it seems from a quick glance online that they have fully bought in. Drivers post videos such as 20 hidden Tesla tips and hidden features and Tesla Model 3Y tips and tricks. I'm all for the EV revolution, but I guess I'm old school. No tricks, no updates, no automatic control. I just want to drive the car.
Thanks very much, Clive.
You are listening to VK3OTN. VK3OTN is the official station of the Radio Amateurs Old Timers Club, Australia, Incorporated, with the monthly news and information bulletin for members and friends of the club.
The history of the transistor and its early developments. A transistor is a semiconductor device with at least three terminals for connection to an electric circuit. In the common case, the third terminal controls the flow of current between the other two terminals. This can be used for amplification, as in the case of a radio receiver, or for rapid switching, as in the case of digital circuits. The transistor replaced the vacuum tube triode, also called a thermionic valve, which was much larger in size and used significantly more power to operate. The first transistor was successfully demonstrated on December 23, 1947, at Bell Laboratories in Murray Hill, New Jersey. Bell Labs was the research arm of American Telephone and Telegraph. The three individuals credited with the invention of the transistor were William Shockley, John Bardeen, and Walter Brattain. The introduction of the transistor is often considered one of the most important inventions in history. Transistors are broadly classified into two categories, bipolar junction transistors and field effect transistors. The principle of a field effect transistor was proposed by Julius Edgar Lilienfeld in 1925. John Bardeen, Walter Brattain and William Sharkey invented the first working transistors at Bell Labs, the point contact transistor, in 1947. Sharkey introduced the improved bipolar junction transistor in 1948, which entered production in the early 1950s and led to the first widespread use of transistors. The MOSFET, also known as the MOS transistor, was invented by Mohammad Atullah and Dewan Kang at Bell Labs in 1959. MOSFETs use even less power, which led to the mass production of MOS transistors for a wide range of uses. The MOSFET has since become the most widely manufactured device in history. Origins of transistor concept. The first patent for the field effect transistor principle was filed in Canada by Austrian-Hungarian physicist Julius Edgar Lilienfeld on October 22, 1925, but Lilienfeld published no research articles about his devices and his work was ignored by industry. In 1934, German physicist Dr. Oskar Heil patented another field effect transistor. There is no direct evidence that these devices were built, but later work in the 1990s showed that one of Lilienfeld's designs worked as described and gave substantial gain. Legal papers from the Bell Labs patent show that William Sharkey and a co-worker at Bell Labs, Gerald Pearson, had built operational versions from Lilienfeld's patents, yet they never referenced this work in any of their later research papers or historical articles. The Bell Labs work on the transistor emerged from wartime efforts to produce extremely pure germanium crystal mixer diodes, used in radar units as a frequency mixer element in microwave radar receivers. UK researchers had produced models using a tungsten filament on a germanium disc, but these were difficult to manufacture and not particularly robust. Bell's version was a single crystal design that was both smaller and completely solid. A parallel project on germanium diodes at Purdue University succeeded in producing the good quality germanium semiconducting crystals that were used at Bell Labs. Early tube-based circuits did not switch fast enough for this role, leading the Bell team to use solid-state diodes instead. After the war, Sharkey decided to attempt the building of a triode-like semiconductor device. He secured funding and lab space and went to work on the problem with Bardeen and Brattain. John Bardeen eventually developed a new branch of quantum mechanics known as surface physics to account for the odd behavior they saw, and Bardeen and Walter Brattain eventually succeeded in building a working device. The key to the development of the transistor was the further understanding of the process of the electron mobility in a semiconductor. It was realized that if there was some way to control the flow of the electrons from the emitter to the collector of this newly discovered diode, discovered 1874, patented 1906, one could build an amplifier. For instance, if one placed contacts on either side of a single type of crystal, the current would not flow through it. However, if a third contact could then inject electrons or holes into the material, the current would flow. Actually doing this appeared to be very difficult. If the crystal were of any reasonable size, the number of electrons or holes required to be injected would have to be very large, making it less useful as an amplifier because it would require a large injection current to start with. That said, the whole idea of the crystal diode was that the crystal itself could provide the electrons over a very small distance, the depletion region. The key appeared to be to place the input and output contacts very close together on the surface of the crystal on either side of this region. Brattain started working on building such a device, and tantalizing hints of amplification continued to appear as the team worked on the problem. And that's where we leave the history of the transistor for this month, returning for the final part on the next broadcast.
OTN on disk. Are you aware that the entire collection of OTN is available on disc, delivered right to your door for the minimal cost of $25? The files are all in a portable document format or PDF and can be viewed on any tablet or desktop PC. As time moves on, you've probably noticed that over the years you tend to hoard a few things. When something new arrives home, you have to find room to keep it. Well, why not consider adding the entire collection of OTN? The really good news is, it won't take up any space at all, and it won't provide any food for the silverfish, if you're plagued by them. There is another advantage that might not be quite so evident. The files are pretty much the same as what goes off to the printer twice a year. As time moves on, many readers realise their eyes aren't as young as they used to be. Viewing articles on a 22-inch screen is a whole lot easier. You can zoom right in and have one whole column on the screen at a time. Like online newspapers, it's not quite the same as a printed copy. But the advantage is you don't have to worry about where you're going to keep the things. Further details of how to order OTN on disk is available from the RAOTC website, www.raotc.org.au. This is Andrew, VK3CAH.
Perth Luncheons. The popular and well-attended monthly luncheons for RAOTC members and friends in and around the Perth area are held on the second Tuesday of each month. The VK6 RAOTC group have a new venue, the Woodbridge Hotel, 50 East Street, East Guildford. Reports indicate the hospitality to be excellent. The Perth group meet at 11:30 a.m. for lunch at 12 midday. This is not a buffet meal, but excellent food in both pensioner and standard portions are available. We would like to place the orders at 12 midday, so please don't be late. This information is courtesy of Phil, VK6ZKO, whose contact details can be found on the club website.
You are listening to VK3OTN and associated relay stations. VK3OTN is the official station of the Radio Amateurs Old Timers Club, Australia, Incorporated, with the monthly news and information bulletin for members and friends of the club.
In keeping with tradition, we conclude this broadcast with a short, humorous story. This one's entitled The Drover. A drover from a huge cattle station in outback Australia appeared before St. Peter at the pearly gates. "Have you done anything of particular merit?" St. Peter asked. "Well, I can think of one thing," the drover offered. "Once on a trip to the back blocks of Broken Hill, out in New South Wales, I came across a gang of bikers who were threatening a young Sheila. I told them to leave her alone, but they wouldn't listen. So I approached the largest, meanest and most heavily tattooed bikie and smacked him in the face, kicked his bike over, ripped out his nose ring and threw it on the ground. I yelled, 'Now back off, or I'll kick you so hard your eyeballs will pop out of their sockets.' St. Peter was impressed. 'Goodness me, that was brave. When did this happen?' 'A couple of minutes ago.'" That's all we have for you this month, and we hope you found something of interest. Thanks for being with us, and we hope you will join in the callbacks where callbacks are taken. The next RAOTC news and information broadcast will take place on the first Monday of February, Monday the 5th, 2024. On the same frequencies and the same times as today. If you have missed all or part of this broadcast, or you just want to listen to it again, it is available for download from the RAOTC website. Simply go to www.raotc.org.au. Again, the website URL is www.raotc.org.au. On the right-hand side is the main menu. Click on VK3OTN Broadcast and you will be able to see the various times and frequencies of the VK3OTN transmissions by all of our volunteers, provided of course a volunteer is available. Down towards the bottom of the page is the current and previous five broadcasts for you to listen to. Sometimes a relay station is an automated broadcast, for example a repeater, where no operator is available to take callbacks. Other times, the volunteer operator suffers from very heavy local QRM, and callbacks are not always possible. Many operators need a small amount of time to switch from playing a recorded file to using a microphone. Please be mindful of this. This is VK3OTN signing clear from today's news and information broadcast. 73 and all the best for the new year from the RAOTC broadcast team.